A few years ago, the spiritual teacher and alternative health advocate Deepak Chopra was giving a talk in a crowded auditorium at Caltech. A man in the audience stood up to challenge what he had to say about quantum physics, and that guy was physicist Leonard Mlodinow, who's co-authored two best-selling books with Stephen Hawking. The two men started talking, and they eventually became friends, and together wrote a book called The War of the Worldviews, Science versus Spirituality. Steve Paulson sat down with Chopra and Mlodinow to hash out their differences on science and the origins of consciousness.
You call your book War of the Worldviews, and let's talk about these two worldviews. Leonard, first of all, what do you see as the basic outline of the scientific worldview?
Well, first we have to understand what science is and what it isn't. I think that's a big issue in all these discussions. What science is a methodology for understanding the physical world. The scientific worldview is a worldview based on observation in which we've decided as scientists that we don't want to just philosophize or, you know, just use pure reason about the physical world as people, you know, used to do many centuries ago. We want to require of our ideas that they be testable, falsifiable. That's in contrast to other ways of looking at the world, which answer other questions, such as philosophy and various spiritual endeavors.
Okay, Deepak, how would you define the spiritual worldview?
Yeah, I will define it in a second, but I want to comment on what Leonard said.
Okay.
Many times people interpret the scientific methodology as exploring the truth. And I would qualify that as saying that scientific methodology is a method for exploring partial truth, because everything we know about nature is not about nature as it is through science, but nature as it reveals herself to the questions we ask.
So you're saying that there are some inherent limits in what science can reveal, or another way to put
it is.
You are arguing that science cannot tell us all that is real.
Yes, and I'm also saying that's where spirituality comes in, because spirituality starts with who am I? Spirituality actually says, just as I can observe the external world, I can observe me, and I can observe me through observing my thoughts, my feelings, my emotions, and actually through meditation and contemplative self-inquiry, I can even go to an experience called transcendence, where I go beyond the subject-object split, where, in fact, I see a sense of connection to the cosmos, and that for me is a spiritual and sacred experience.
Leonard, do you accept that definition or that understanding of spirituality?
Well, I think everyone has, you know, to find their own spirituality. My point of view is that science tells us, as Deepak said, yes, partial truths, at least observable truths about the observable universe that we observe. And that leaves the inner universe of the meaning of life or the questions as to why should the universe be the way it is for everyone to decide for themselves.
But I hear Deepak actually taking this one step further. The spiritual perspective is not just sort of what you personally bring to it. He's also suggesting there's some deeper underlying reality there, an unseen reality, well, the way you write about it, Deepak, in your book, an unseen reality that is the source of all visible things.
I don't accept that. I don't see evidence for an unseen reality, but I have nothing against people philosophizing about it.
The deeper reality I'm talking about is, you know, in perennial philosophies called consciousness. Consciousness that creates a subjective experience and also consciousness that creates an objective experience. So that both are two sides of that deeper reality.
It sounds like you're suggesting that consciousness, in some cases at least, comes before material reality. I guess, the way we might say it, the mind comes before brain?
Actually, I'm saying that consciousness comes before mental and material reality. It's not the way biologists or scientists talk about it, but it's the way that has been understood in the perennial philosophies of Aldous Huxley and Emerson and Thoreau, in the Eastern philosophers like Lao Tzu, in Buddha's teachings. But it's very experiential. And I'm not talking about religion here. I'm talking about observing yourself, observing your thoughts.
Okay, let me bring Leonard back into this discussion here. What's your understanding of this word consciousness?
Well, I think that Deepak's definition and the definition of science are two different things, and it happens to be the same word. You know, in science, we don't see any evidence for this kind of connectedness that Deepak is talking about. That's kind of a philosophical, those are philosophical ideas, which we respect. But what we look for when we talk about consciousness are very specific processes in the brain. What happens in the brain when you feel a specific emotion, when you see a color, when you feel love? I don't mean to be saying that we're understanding through that the meaning of love, but just that the scientific approach is to say, how does the brain create these feelings?
But the dominant paradigm in science, especially in neuroscience, is that everything that happens in the mind is a product of brain function, right?
Right. I think Deepak agrees with that. Is that not?
I don't, actually. My experience of the world is that it's a pretty messy, noisy, colorful, smelly place. My experience is not neural firings or neural networks.
Well, is the question, is the mind a product of the brain or is the mind outside the brain?
And I'm saying both mind and brain are a product of a field of awareness, which is prior to subject-object split.
Well, all science can tell you is that the experiences that are reported by the mind are experiences that are produced in the neural system of the brain. You know, for instance, one story I tell in the book is about a split-brain patient. Split-brain means that the patient has had surgery to cut the brain, the left and the right hemisphere, off from each other to control severe epilepsy. And when you do that, you essentially cut the person into two personalities. There's one story that I tell, a neuroscientist that was interviewing a woman who had this surgery and asked, how many seizures have you had in the last week? And her left hand says 2 and her right hand puts up 3. So the two parts of the brain disagree and they end up eventually arguing with each other and fighting each other, and one hand tries to suppress the other hand. So this shows that when you cut the brain in half, you cut the mind into two also, that this person now became from one consciousness to two consciousnesses, that each side of the brain is now an individual mind. So this shows you the connection between mind and brain, that the mind is a product of the brain, really literally is the same as the brain.
Well, listen, the material world has its origins in a domain that is not material. And I'm saying so does the mental.
Deepak, is immaterial another word for supernatural?
No, by immaterial I mean not having units of mass or energy. The experience of love or compassion or joy is not something you can measure in units of mass and energy.
Okay, let me turn to Leonard here. What about these concepts or these experiences like love or hope or beauty? We all have some sense of this, but are these beyond science? Does science have anything to say about these things?
Look, scientists are people who have awe and wonder at the universe around them. And we as scientists, in a way, we have even more awe and wonder than people who aren't scientists, because we're dealing with these wondrous things all the time. You know, the astronomers studying, thinking about colliding black holes, it's not something that the average person normally thinks about. You know, the question of, well, is that really real? Is that an illusion? You know, how real is it? Or what does it mean to be real? You know, these aren't things that scientists really consider.
Okay, let me ask a more specific question. Let's talk about love. Given what neuroscience, what brain science might be able to reveal about the brain in the future, will science ever be able to explain the experience of love?
Scientists believe that all the experiences in the brain come from physical laws. So in science, if you find out what is the scientific explanation of love, that will tell you that love comes from this part of your brain, and when these neurons take the blah, blah, blah form, then you feel love, and oxytocin is secreted, and whatever else neuroscientists discover will be a scientific explanation of love. Now, the idea of what is the meaning of love, you know, is beyond that, and that's for us all to figure out for ourselves.
You know, we can measure in the brain that oxytocin goes up when you're feeling that experience of love. But oxytocin is not the experience of love. Just because we can measure oxytocin or where we can see a neural network that corresponds to that experience, it still isn't the raw experience of life. And what spirituality seeks to understand is the raw experience of life. A mechanistic explanation cannot give us the answers to the most important experiences that we have in life.
Look, either the brain follows the laws of physics or it doesn't. if it follows the laws of physics, and I can take the brain at any given time and tell you what it's going to do at a later time. That doesn't leave any room for free will.
Do you think creativity and imagination...
Creativity can come from a mechanistic algorithm. What's creativity and imagination to one person, is just a normal way of exploration.
We're running very short of time. Deepak, the last word here?
Last word is Leonard is using data to explain experience. I'm using experience to explain data.
Oh, I agree with
me,
that.
For me, experience is much important than data.
And I agree with that too, but it's not science.
That's a good place to leave it. Thank you so much. This has been very invigorating.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Deepak Chopra and Leonard Mlodinow talked with Steve Paulson about their book War of the Worldviews. You'll find the complete uncut interview on our website at ttbook.org.